Hello, lovely podcast people. Welcome back to another episode of Not Another Nutrition Podcast. God, it's been so long, I almost forgot the name. So, did not really feel like I was going to need to do one of these for a long time, but sadly, thanks to the shouting gimp who runs around supermarkets, no, not Carnivore MD, but the one and only Eddie Abu, I'm having to do this podcast because I'm going to be honest, I haven't even done a social media post about him yet, calling him out, because initially I felt very sorry for him. I thought he maybe had some problems that made him the way he was. I thought he was relatively harmless, just a sort of harmless imbecile. But unfortunately, he's quite aggressive, and so I've lost some level of compassion for him. I think he can probably handle being called out and corrected, and in his case, I have no inclination that he'll change his mind based on the sort of small amount I've seen of him. But he's obviously become super famous, which I think obviously some of that is for comedic value, people laughing at him. And of course, there's this whole algorithm cycle. And so, you know, misinformation spreads much, much faster than correct, evidence-based, uncontroversial information. So it's worth correcting some of the stuff. And there's countless places I could go with this, but I'm going to start with one that keeps happening time and time again. And I will just say this quickly, in the same way that someone like Tim Spector, these are two very different, but also with lots of similarities, individuals. You know, one is just a very, you know, relatively successful professional bodybuilder, took copious amounts of drugs, combined that with amazing genetics and dedication, and looked amazing. And by his own admission, left himself maybe in a not great way. He's managed to turn that around, highly likely through a huge reduction in those drugs that he was taking, and potentially with not doing kind of really extreme bulking and cutting cycles, just eating well consistently, and is kind of reaping the rewards through some of his changes. But in the same way that I've discussed before, you can have success in spite of doing stupid things. That's what he's achieving, but attributing it to maybe silly things. But also he's somewhat of a hypocrite in that he says one thing and does, for instance, he's been very critical of maybe using whey protein in these processed powders when he was a bodybuilder. You don't need that shit. And then, so saying, you know, I'm so much more healthy now that I'm not having that. And he then posts up videos of him at 45 years old as a bodybuilder, looking, you know, phenomenal by bodybuilding standards, of course, which is, I really like that look. I know lots of people don't, but by all accounts, looks very lean and fit and healthy. Of course, it's not healthy, but in this day and age, we deem that kind of godlike, Greek godlike physique to be some sort of physical health prowess type scenario. So anyway, he posts that and goes, this is what I look like at 45. Let me see anyone else doing that. And, you know, he's obviously, unfortunately, talking about two things in direct conflict. He's saying, back then I didn't know what I was doing. I was taking drugs. I was eating the wrong things. Now I know what the answer. Listen to me now. But then he's going, look at me now. I'm physically amazing and healthy and great. Who else can repeat this? Which, of course, in the world of professional bodybuilding, there's loads of amazing physiques. You know, within stardom, celebrities, you know, all of the different things that you can take and use to look a certain way give this kind of anti-aging super physiological advantage. But anyway, on the flip side, we've got Tim Spector, who is notably a professor, so should know better. You know, we've got this idiot, and then we've got professor. They're both talking rubbish often, but at the same time, they're both saying some good things. And I don't want to discredit the good things that they say. I don't want to necessarily call them bad people. I had a good philosophical discussion with my children the other day about what makes a good and a bad person, and gave them lots of scenarios that hopefully led to this point of like deeming someone or a bad person is a very difficult thing to do. But at the same time, a certain part of someone's personality and actions, certainly actions can be bad, probably. I'm not going to go too deep into the philosophy of that one. but I have opinions on why certain people are doing things, whether it's money and fame, and if they're knowingly lying. Well, someone like Tim Noakes, who I debated, and I can discuss him today. Sorry, I'm going off on one a little bit, but I just want to set the scene a little bit for you. And I know I've been away for a while. Some of you want to listen to this or just like listening during your steps and walking. Tim Noakes, when I debated Tim, I had a level of respect for him because I knew that what he was saying, he truly believed, you know, in his soul. He had had a life experience and he believed these things, which the belief had turned him into a zealot. He had lost his scientific way with things and, you know, ended up looking silly when in many ways in the debate with me because I didn't have this. I wasn't debating on emotion. I was just debating on facts and data. But at least I had respect for him in what he believed. Whereas other people like Tim Spector, I'm fairly certain things that he's saying are there to make money, get fame, get clicks. Not necessarily to hurt people, but not worrying about whether people are misled by the information if it benefits him and the companies he's involved with and the people he's working with. And, you know, very much should know better than what he's doing. And I think probably does at times, and so purposefully words things in a way that he knows aren't necessarily true. Eddie, I think he's just a overzealous muppet, which, you know, we can talk about why that is. So a big thing he's been talking about is insulin. Now, I thought the whole insulin thing was dead. I did my big world tour in 2019 talking about this. It's very, very easy to blow this out of the water. And I mentioned recently in the post about the paper or two I'm going to discuss today. And people were asking all about it. So I thought, you know what, I'll just do a podcast that literally just discusses this podcast that for me is the start and close to the end of the nail in the coffin for this idea that insulin is somehow this thing that is making us fat. The insulin hypothesis has been around for many decades. And we really just know it's silly. And most of the proponents of it shifted away from the insulin hypothesis and cutting out carbohydrates to discussing, oh, well, it's sugar and you know, keep moving the goalposts to keep themselves relevant. But Eddie's back, clueless and jumping on the first thing that really is a 1980s concept, but is successfully misleading people and discussing this and not ever refuting any evidence that anyone puts in front of him, but obviously shouting them down. So I think this is a great thing for people who are maybe new to the area or come across this video through or podcast through it being shared to help enlighten them so that they don't go down bad eating habits, poor relationship with food, cutting foods out they don't need to, because we have a good understanding. I've got lots of podcasts that talk about fat loss specifically, but I'm going to talk about this study. So there's a study in 2015 by Kevin Hall and colleagues, and the backstory as well to this study is kind of hilarious, and it's close to my heart because it involves me. So Gary Taubes is a famous journalist, science writer, I believe he's called. He's a physicist by training, turned journalist, turned I'm someone who cut carbs and had some benefits and now I'm going to write about it. He had a £1 million book deal before £1 million book deals were really even a thing. Actually, so funny. It looks like a setup now. I have a pile of stuff here that I use because I don't like it when wires are bent into my computer. And so I have a pile of books where I put connectors to rest on it so everything's at the same level. And the second book in my pile is Why We Get Fat by Gary Taubes. And I don't know if on my bookshelf back here, one of his first books, or maybe this is the US one, The Diet Delusion. So I have lots of bad books on this shelf. Please don't think they're all good. But actually most of them, that some of them are amazing, some of them, Paleo Solution, not great. So don't take anything from these. These are just the only books I own. I'm not a book person. I'm a research studies person. Anyway, so where are we? I spoke at a conference back in 2015. Gary Taubes was one of the major headline speakers. And I sat with Gary at lunch and with Alan Aragon. And we sat on a little high table and there was a buffet lunch. And it was hilarious because it was mostly fit pros. This was the Epic Fitness Summit and something like evidence-based practice in some international conference. I don't know. And the only things he could put on his plate was like a couple of bits of wafer-thin ham and like a bit of cheese. And maybe there was something that he had, like a cracker or something, but he didn't eat it. I distinctly remember that. Anyway, I sat with him and discussed the fact that he truly believed that cutting carbs was the only way that anyone could lose fat and controlling insulin. And I said, obviously, you're a fantastically clever individual. You physics, you understand the laws of thermodynamics. I don't understand how you can, your brain's fallen out on this particular subject. I said, he started talking to me about his diet, talking about how many calories roughly he ate. And the fact that he didn't really count calories, I don't believe. The fact that his brother was different from him. Lots of discussions. But essentially I said to him, so let's say you are eating 3,000 calories a day, very low carbohydrate. You swap that isocalorically for a 3,000 calorie but higher carbohydrate, lower fat diet. What do you think would happen? And he said, I know what would happen. I would gain 10 pounds of fat. And I said, what makes you think that? It's so incorrect, and we have countless studies that show that that wouldn't happen. And he said, I know it to be true. And I said, how do you reason that the numerous studies, which he knows about, all of these studies that I said, you know, fat loss is about creating an energy deficit. It's when there's a negative fat balance in the body, you are oxidizing more fat than your body is taking in or storing, or, you know, we know the conversion of carbohydrate to fat is very, 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 very small. So really it's the fat that we eat that's getting stored as fat. But obviously eating more carbohydrate can promote us storing dietary fat as fat. I have a whole podcast on that. I'll link it in the show notes, actually, just in case you can Google it. It's called something like, hold on, I've got my laptop here. It's called something like, why doesn't this work? It's called something like Why Carbohydrates Make You Fat, Not Another Nutrition Podcast. How Carbohydrates Literally Can't Make You Fat. I can't actually see what episode that is, annoyingly. Why can't I? But you can go in episode 50, but I'll link it in the show notes. So anyway, I said, we have all these studies, we know why this happens, you know, we understand its energy balance. The studies show this time and time again with the isocaloric reduction in calories, low carb versus low fat, no one wins. And even studies where they just look at weight loss, not even body composition. Bueno et al., I can't remember the year, 2012, 2013. I'll link it in the show notes as always. But at something like a statistical difference in the weight change of low carb versus low fat individuals, I believe it's a meta-analysis even, and the difference is significant. Low carb wins, but in weight, not fat loss. And secondly, the difference in the fat loss over 12 months of living a boring, restricted, absurd life is 0.9 kilograms, I believe. I think that was the value in that study. So, you know, we discussed these facts, and he says all of those studies are flawed. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, the only reason anyone ever loses fat is because they reduce the carbohydrate. And I said, that's wrong. We have studies. It's high carbohydrate diet versus low carbohydrate diet, high fat, you know, calorie deficit. And he said, yes, but in the low fat, high carb groups, as a result of a calorie deficit, I reducing calories from that group, inevitably, their absolute intake of carbs goes down. So they may be eating 350 grams of carbs a day just to get a deficit. In these studies, they tend to reduce carbs and fat to get to the deficit. But in the low carb group, they reduce all carbs and don't really worry about fat, and even sometimes increase it. So I was like, right, so you're saying the only reason that the high carb group lost fat is because they had an absolute reduction in carbs, there was some carbs removed from their diet. He said, yes. And I said, but there's no studies showing what you're saying is true. And he said, yeah, but there's no studies showing that what I'm saying isn't true. And I was like, wow, there's no comeback to that. But of course he's saying stuff as though it's fact. He has no evidence, but he does have perhaps an adequate gap in the research, even if it sounds ridiculous. Fast forward to what he, again, he was talking about these studies. And we get the results of a study. He essentially, it was, I've just suddenly, this has cropped into my head, NUSI. Was it called NUSI? NUSI? Anyway, Nutrition Science Institute. So I don't know. He basically created this thing and he got funding from really rich other zealots who were taken by his message. And they had so much, millions, investment to do the study that he was talking about. So they went and found a group of researchers who were excellent, handpicked by him, not biased researchers, and they were going to do this study. They were going to do a study where they didn't lower the carbohydrate in the low-fat group, calorie deficit group. And so they did it. And this is the study, the Kevin Hall 2015 study. And then they did another follow-up in 2016 where they did an addition to this. Now, what's amazing about this study is they did an 8% fat diet. So that what they said was that we're going to give a baseline diet, then we're going to put them into a calorie deficit, but in the low-fat group, we're only going to lower fat. And in the low-carb group, we're only going to lower carbs. So the low-fat group went down to an 8% fat diet. Now, that is minging. I mean, that's an ass tasting diet, and not, as I usually say, not the good kind of ass that you'd like to eat. So where does this leave us? Well, it leaves us with the perfect study to test his hypothesis. And obviously, when you've reduced fat that low, you're able to maintain all, it was like, again, it was like this 350 grams of carbs. And I can't remember, but I feel like it was like 20 to 25% sugars, maybe. And that might have been in the 2016 study, so don't fully quote me on that stat. And they had a situation where in the low-carb group, they had a dramatic reduction in insulin, fantastic, and a significant increase in ketone bodies. And on top of this, they used really, really accurate methods for measuring body fat. And even better, they used the most accurate method for measuring fat balance. So when you measure body weight, it could be anything you're losing from. When you use body composition, there are obviously errors inborn within that, the estimations, because we're not cutting people open and actually measuring the amount of fat. There are errors, there's estimations. Whereas when we measure the exact amount of fat going into a system and the exact amount that is being oxidized, burnt out, coming out of the system, we can do a simple subtraction exercise to go, there's our answer in grams. So they did this study. And you can just imagine Gary Taubes, this super famous zealot. I mean, he had a breakdown after this study, as you can imagine, because I'm not going to say all of this and be like, oh, yeah, he was right. By the way, guys, I've known this since 2015. I've just been making it up. No, so the study insanely showed. The study actually didn't even show that he was wrong. It showed that he was ridiculously wrong. So what the study showed was, obviously, when you take all of the carbohydrate out of someone's diet, a lot of the carbohydrate out of someone's diet, we naturally burn carbohydrate when we are eating a lot of it. And so there's something called the respiratory exchange ratio, which we can measure and tells us how many carbs or fats we're burning. There's lots of dumb, do you know what? I'm going to make a note. I still haven't done. I get offered these biotechnology things on Instagram all the time, people going, do you want to like be an influencer and give you some money and you talk about our product? I'm like, you trust me, you do not want me talking about your product. Do you sometimes think like, yeah, pay me money and I'll review your product and then I'll give an honest review? But I just, that also doesn't sit ethically with me. It's a bit like when someone offers to buy you a drink because they want, and obviously knowing that they want to bang you, and you go, yeah, and then you don't bang them, when you should just go, no, I'm okay, thank you, because I understand what that gesture means. Anyway, that will set some whatever's off, snowflakes off. And obviously, and probably make some of you judge yourself. But I'm not judging you. I'm just saying something to consider. This is a tangent. So back on topic, in this study, you respiratory exchange ratio, you burn those things. God, where did I go? How did I get to that? You take a drink, ethically those biotechnologies, we're back. Respiratory exchange ratio, we can measure that when it's closer to 0.7, you're burning more fat, one is carbs. But with burning carbs, you take the carbs away, you keep burning the carbs, you've got to get them from somewhere, and we'll take them from our body stores. Now, that's what happened in this study. There's a little bit of a lag time where the low carb group kept burning carbs before they switched over to burning fat. And these things happened in tandem at the same time, but obviously, we've lowered them so much that remained at a slightly higher level, so we dipped into glycogen levels. It's one of the reasons we see water loss in lower carb diets very early on, and then it kind of stagnates a bit. But what happened during that time is the very high carb group in a deficit with very, very low fat. Once they had burnt all their carbs for the day, they switched and were burning fat. And so they, you know, very high carb, that we're storing some of that. And as muscle glycogen, so muscle glycogen would have been maintained much more. So they're going in the postprandial state, post-absorptive state, going into burning fat. And bam, they got a little bit ahead, a few grams ahead in fat burning. So the conclusion of this study was, I'm going to try and find out my laptop. But the conclusion of this study was literally something like, well, no, the title of the study is like calorie for calorie. A low fat diet is better than the low carbohydrate diet. But it's only in, it's not. Like, it's literally a few days different. The takeaway from this study is there's absolutely no difference. This study has wiped the floor with this idea you need to control or lower insulin to lose body fat. It is not the case. It's also just worth saying at this point that we have data. Insulin is sort of, where this comes from is when you eat carbohydrate, you raise your insulin levels, and that is a substrate oxidation switch. It tells us like a fuel selection switch that goes, oh, you've got glucose in your blood. That's not really good for us to be there. Let's burn that off and store some of it so we can go back to burning fat. And it's a normal process. But in that normal process, and if you believe in I guess, I mean, it doesn't matter what you believe in. If you believe in evolution or you believe in the perfect creation in the image of God. we're designed or made or evolved really, really flipping well to eat these foods that we've been eating forever for the last 2,000 years, 4,000 years, or 4,000 millennia. And we can handle eating carbohydrate from berries, honey, all these different foods, anything with carbohydrate in them, potatoes, tubers, potatoes with very, very high glycemic index, obviously. And we release insulin, and it's the perfect marrying of our physiology with our environment to keep us all well and good. So where was I? We have this scenario where we are showing that you don't have to reduce insulin. But what's more is we have data to show that actually our body responds to that insulin because it's learnt over our evolution, or whatever you want to believe, that signals feeding. So we get this response, and the response is actually an anorexigenic effect, a satiating effect, a I'm fed, I'm being fed effect. So people go, insulin makes you hungry. It doesn't. But even the likes of Tim Spector and Glucose Gimpess Dim Nectar and Glucose Gimpess and all these other people saying we should manage and control our blood glucose and our insulin and all this, just ignore this data. The fact that you eat a potato, it does spike your, spike, quote unquote, your insulin levels. It spikes your glucose, it spikes your insulin. But actually, if you look at something called the satiety index, and you know, I'll link you to some of these papers that show insulin is a satiating hormone. There's a really good one. There's a couple of good ones. One is a bit older. I think it's like a 1996 study. I can't remember. There's an H. Flint, maybe. I think the Flint paper is an Arne Astrup study, a really cool nutrition researcher from Denmark, and he's done loads of cool work, and I'll link you to those studies, but essentially showing these things that relate to what I'm discussing here about the satiety index. And actually you release the insulin and it's sending these signals to your body, and potatoes are one of the highest, if not the highest food on the satiety index. It kind of doesn't make sense. I get it. I get the cognitive dissonance that creates for you. It's same for me. But again, when you look at the cultures that don't have any diabetes, really any cancer, cardiovascular disease, maintain the body weight through their lives, they eat so many types of potatoes, tubers, potato flour, this sort of stuff. But anyway, I think we're kind of quite anti-potato sometimes. In the West, maybe, because we turn them into crisps and chips and add, you know, process them, add fat to them, make them more calorific, make them more palatable. Anyway, so this study, it really just blows the insulin hypothesis or any idea that you need to lower insulin. This study showed categorically you do not need to lower insulin to lose body fat. And the difference was really dramatic. So there you go. I didn't actually mention the 2016 paper, but I don't have any notes on it. But essentially, it took this a step further. The diet in this study was 8%. The 2016 paper then dropped it down to 6% or lower. Ketogenic diet, you know, ramped ketones through the roof, even, you know, significantly higher, even in this study. So this whole, you know, they were fat adapted, maximally fat adapted, and, you know, no greater fat loss. What I will say, actually, in that study is there is an idea. One of the parts of the insulin hypothesis is that there's a metabolic advantage. So essentially, ketones will increase in your urine. So you're essentially excreting more energy. And they do go up measurably, urinary ketone excretion, beta hydroxybutyrate levels go up. But it's to the magnitude of about less than 15 calories per day increase. So there's nothing to write home about. And even in that study, I believe after a period, I think it was 30 days on the ketogenic diet, fat loss actually started to slow and energy started to come more from lean body mass reserves. So I think protein oxidation started to go up. So as far as I'm concerned, we've known since 2015, 2016, and since then, that more and more and more and more has come out on this, that you know, we've got the studies on ultra-processed versus unprocessed food. We've got another, I believe, 2018, 2019, maybe, study on ketogenic diets versus a very low-fat plant-based diet, ad libitum eating in a metabolic ward. I think that's the one. I could do a podcast on that one as well, maybe, to discuss it. That one blew my mind, because the one good thing maybe with ketogenic diets is that you lower hunger. And actually, I'm just going to talk about this super quickly. One of the key things that people find when they go, I cut carbs, I lost weight, I cut fat, I didn't lose as much weight, I don't know why. Two reasons. One, you drop water weight with low-carb diets. Done. But number two, naturally speaking, I coined this term back in about 2008, talking about the ease of implementation and also the implementation effect of a diet. If you implement the effect, if you implement a low-fat diet, how much fat is the average person eating per day? And how much can they realistically, through the implementation of a low-fat diet, reduce that fat intake? And what is the magnitude, what is the amount of fat and how many calories does that equate to that they have reduced? And I will tell you, it's not going to be much more than around 500 to maybe 900 calories. Maybe a bit more. You know, if someone was eating 117 grams of fat a day and they managed to reduce that down to 17 grams of fat a day, I'm using 17 because actually that was the level that was used in the 2015 Hall paper. That is a 100 gram reduction in fat. That's 900 calories. And that's the most insane thing that you would never be able to maintain. Flip that on its head and go, I'm going to switch from a 375 grams of carbs a day to 25 grams of carbs a day, which is a ketogenic diet, sort of one of the definitions, type of definitions of a ketogenic diet, 5% or less than 50 grams or less than 25 grams. Some people quote, you're losing 350 grams of carbs. And if we do the maths times 350 by 4, we get 1400, I think. You see the difference. You're immediately a pound of fat loss ahead of the low fat group. on top of the extra pound or two or three that you'll lose just as a result of water loss. So you start to see why people can easily, through observation, which is one of these problems, which is why the scientific method is so fantastic, because as humans, we have this major flaw of we collect data through observations, and sometimes we aren't able to control all variables and we relate one thing to another thing. Something that happened because of one thing to actually a variable we didn't realize had changed. So, paper that I was mentioning there, they did a ketogenic diet, which versus a high carb, low fat, I think vegan or plant-based diet. And actually, the ketogenic diet, even though usually through promoting ketosis, your appetite goes down. So you eat less, not even just because you've dropped calories, you actually don't want to eat as many calories. So that's fantastic. They actually showed that there was even greater reduction with a low fat, plant-based diet. And like, I don't like that message. Maybe because of my bias, maybe because it just challenged some of my thinking, but I'm happy to accept it. You know, I'm one of these people, I will admit when something makes me feel a certain way. Feelings are great, you know, when we talk about relationships and jealousy and all these sort of things that I also like to talk about, that I'm considering talking about more on the podcast since I started my new Instagram account around certain different things. I think one of the key titles is evidence-based sex education, but naturally what's coming with that is lots of discussion about communication and relationships and those sorts of things, but that's really just a side gig at the minute. But I thought it'd be cool. I actually got asked to create a new podcast with someone who's in this world, so that might be quite cool. But god, goodness, I've got enough things, plates to spin. But anyway, what was I talking about? Communication, relationships, diet. How did I lose my way there? Oh yes. So, you know, the way something makes you feel is absolutely fine. Just it's how you react to that situation that's the most important thing. So for me, it's like, oh yeah, I understand. Oh, and I can question where these feelings come from in relationships. I can question where these feelings come from with regards to nutrition. Why do I think that? Why do I feel so strongly that way? What's led me to believe, have those beliefs? And then dig into it more, but being sure to be evidence-based and led by data. So in this instance, it's like, oh, wow, why would this be? And I, you know, I've come to my own conclusions on essentially that there's a very new vegan study where everyone said, 99% of subjects essentially said, I would not continue with this, it's horrendous, but because it tasted so disgusting, they ate less calories. And anyway, we'll leave that there. So we have all of this information, we have the new studies, and I just want to say one thing as well. I just as a little summary for you, when someone talks about fat burning and fat oxidation, and you know, like I've said, some of these pens you blow into that are saying whether you're a carb burner or a fat burner, never get them. They're pointless. They're just as pointless as the stupid glucose monitor patches that people are wearing. They don't help you. When people talk about fat burning, this is why the insulin hypothesis and cutting carbohydrates, lots of stuff ties together that it makes it a plausible or believable story that it might be important. And actually, so sorry, I won't jump off. What you need to understand is there a difference between fat burning acutely around a meal or on a day and longitudinal fat loss. And I actually did a podcast with Danny Lennon on this. Where is it? Fat Oxidation Sigma Nutrition Radio. I'll link you to this as well. Episode 50. God, that's like how many hundreds of episodes has he done now? And it was one of the most listened to ever episodes talking about this difference between what fat oxidation is and fat loss. So you can go and watch that. I'll link that as well. Cool. So I think we're done. I think I've told you everything you need to know about this. Hopefully it's left you with realizing we're still on the calorie deficit, the energy deficit train. There's still a huge discussion to be had with regards to this in terms of the biggest question around weight loss maintenance. Don't listen to any idiots who tell you it's impossible for anyone. You know, 95% of diets fail. This is absurd. Anyone who said that is a dumbass. And then secondly, how do we create our calorie deficit on an individual basis that allows us to remain satiated, feel good. Obviously, I talk about aggressive dieting strategies because the evidence is overwhelmingly strong that they are the best for long-term weight loss and long-term maintenance and motivation and adherence and all these, and satiety and, you know, hunger management and those sorts of things. And I'll finish the podcast by just a reminder. I don't know when I'm going to release this, but obviously I've got my talks in Sydney on, I think it's Friday evening, the 22nd, Perth on like the 27th, 28th, the Wednesday after that in the evening, and then in Singapore on Saturday afternoon. And everyone who, and I'm just going to say this as well for my long-term listeners or people who, please don't DM me about my rapid, you know, aggressive dieting calculator. When it's ready, I will of course let you know. The next version will be a paid version. It's all singing, all dancing. It does everything that you need it to do, hopefully, and I'll continue to update it. I just need to sort a way of making it not break, fully programmable. I don't want the technical issues. But it's going to do all of these things. You'll be able to understand where you need to sit if you want to definitely retain 100% all lean body mass, where you need to sit if you want to maximize fat loss and probably likely maintain all of your muscle, or where you can go to if you want to eat less calories than those figures, where muscle loss or lean body mass loss maybe becomes an issue, and what that will do, then how often you might now need to have to refeed, aggressive refeeds or diet breaks, and then also the magnitude of those. So how, you know, how many grams of carbs you'll need to eat and how many calories you'll need to eat, and also for how many days you should maintain that before going back into an aggressive deficit. So my seminars, everyone who comes to the seminar will get that new All Singing All Dancing calculator as part of attending, and then, but I will also, once it's, I can release it out to the world in sort of digital form, I will make that known, and you guys will be able to purchase that. And I'll probably also be creating some resources to go alongside it, and probably long-term, no, I'm not going to say that, but other stuff. But I would suggest, especially if you're a coach or someone wanting to do this aggressive diet yourself, come to the seminars if you can make it. I will also be doing one of those in the UK and one of those in the US, maybe a couple in the US because the US is so freaking big. And of course, people will be like, what about Canada? I'd probably try and do one in Canada. And what about South Africa? I don't know. The problem for me is volume. Plane tickets are flipping expensive. Hotels are flipping expensive. And also, people are busy and in funds. And so, obviously, I don't really care about making much money on these trips. None of my live events ever really make much money, but I love doing them. It's my absolute favorite to talk in front of people. I kind of channel the energy I get from talking to you guys in person, if you've ever attended, into this podcast when I'm looking at this just boring black screen in front of me. But as well, always make it an enjoyable event. Always stick around for further questions. Go off topic if people want. We obviously always have a social element, and I am very, very happy to just talk more and more and more about nutrition and people's goals and people's businesses. That's another thing as well with the seminars I will touch on as well, how people can use this as part of their coaching businesses, their nutrition practice. Obviously, there'll be some MNU certified nutritionists who come along to this who are really looking to implement what they've done on MNU. Anyway, I think that's everything. I'll probably have to do some sort of separate post on Eddie Abu and sort of correct him on some things. No doubt he'll give me some abuse. Of course, I don't mind that. I've hastened to talk about him, as I've said, in terms of giving him more publicity, but now he's such a superstar, and Boris Johnson, I even mentioned in him, someone told me, is painful when he's spreading so much misinformation, and also is just a hypocrite. You know, the guy is selling stuff in his gyms that he tells people online not to have. He's got some sort of meal plan prep thingamajig that uses loads of the diet drinks he says you can't have and processed foods you can't have, and sells whey protein as part of that. So it's, you know, it's got to a point where it's unethical, and, you know, he needs to shut the front door. And let's stick to the science and actually help people. And I also have noticed, because of the way he is and social media is, he's getting such a young audience. And it's good. We've not had anyone like him for so long, I feel like. There's been more niches. He's becoming such a bit of a household name, isn't he? And it's insane. And some of the really bad miseducators have fortunately died. Are you allowed to say that? I don't care. And they're no longer out there misleading people. And even some of the people who are misleading and talking BS, you know, I've personally called some of them out and they've pivoted their businesses and messages. You know, they've obviously made their money and got their following and pivoted, and people have forgotten all the shy that they were talking about body typing and gluten being bad and everyone should be eating paleo and you can't consume dairy and hamstring flexibility being important for fat loss. Goodness me, it's insane, isn't it? That's a lot of those about one person, but there are other people just like him. Anyway, I'll leave it there. Until next time, much love. Do let me know if you listen to this. Do let me know if you have any other suggestions. Let me know that you're still listening. Tag me in your stories on Instagram and stuff. I am thinking of starting a TikTok account that will combine both of my new Instagram account, my smaller one, and my new one, and my old one, my main one, that will talk about all of the things around my life. But anyway, till next time, much love.